very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. You're going up strong here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumper Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. And we're here on Anzac Day, lest we forget. Anzac Day commemorates the landing of Australian and New Zealand troops on Gallipoli Peninsula on the 25th of April, 1915. And look, with that, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Uncle Philip Bowie and his role as a petty officer, elder, for the Navy personnel. And a very good morning to you, Uncle Phil. How are you?
Good afternoon, Trev.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
My name's Philip Bowie. I'm from Thursday Island. My mob is from the Kararuk people of Inner Islands, Torres Strait, and that's my mother's side. And from Baidu Island, my father, they're from Aragon.
Okay, beautiful footprint, and a big shout out to all your mob. So you're a petty officer, elder for the Navy, and we're talking about Navy Indigenous Development Program. Let's first talk about your journey. How long have you been in the Navy?
I first joined the Navy back in 1965. I was only 16, and I spent 9 years in the Royal Australian Navy, where I joined up at HMAS Lewin at Fremantle.
Fremantle, over WA.
Yes.
Represent. That's a long way from the Torres Straits, eh, Uncle.
Yes, I know. And that at that time, we were still walking around bare feet up at TI, so...
Fantastic. So, how many years then did you and then you'll come back to the Navy as reserves? I knew there was Army reserves. I didn't realise there was Navy reserves as well.
I spent a lot of time, in civilian life after I left the Navy, a fair bit of time actually. It's only last year that... I was approached, to play the uncle role and help support some of the young Navy recruits that were coming through.
And so the Navy approached you regarding coming back into this position as an uncle role?
Because other states have got that, I believe, in New South Wales. And of course, my brother, Don, who's in the Army, he's... been involved with this program for the last 8 years, okay. Himself and Jerry Savage.
Yeah, big shout out to your brother there and also brother Jerry Savage. Look, it was a no-brainer, and you was all yes for, I'd love to come back on board as an uncle role.
Yes, lending support to some of the younger generation now today because of, the lifestyle that they lead, not like before time when we had to listen to our parents. And but now, they're distracted by so many other information, so it can be confusing for the young people today to make their mind up what they really want to do.
And look, there's a fantastic career pathways and opportunity for our black people to join the Australian Defence Force, Navy with the hat that you're wearing. There's opportunities there, isn't there?
Oh, most definitely. Both, I would say, mentally and financially.
Yes.
Because it, helped provide anyway, for myself, coming from the islands and living on the mainland. And this is what this program as attracted our people from the communities.
Yes.
And they're sort of disadvantaged. So, and this program will open doors for them.
Yes, fantastic. And how do young ones, can young ones sign up as a reserve or is it full-time? Full-time work?
Yes, this program was set up for those ones. What would I say? Like I said before, they come from the community where education is not a an incentive for them, because there was nothing for them to work or if not study towards back in communities. Jobs are very
scarce.
This
gives them a nice platform to work towards something.
Yes, that's
right. But it's also getting a taste of the Navy as well. You know?
Yes, yes. And I suppose, it brings out, I suppose, the warrior in them. And
nice description.
Yeah.
Bring out the warrior in them, yes.
Yeah, and also the ladies themselves, and
of course,
and you have patriarchal and matriarchal roles, so it really establishes that.
It does, but we also with a job with the Navy, you then can get different jobs within the Navy and different fields. You know what I mean? That you can take outside when you do leave the Navy back in civilian life.
Oh, but most definitely the opportunities there. I mean, job-wise, all depends on your education level, but once you're in, you can also switch around or, if not, move on because you're not distracted so much. You've got a lot of good instructors and mentors within the Navy itself, and I suppose my role as an uncle and auntie kickstarts that journey.
Yeah, and it gives them support in regard to the journey that they're about to take.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, fantastic. And in regards to employment of First Nation people with the Australian Defence Force, Navy included, but across the board, and numbers are high, aren't they?
Well, yes, I don't even know how many now, but when I joined up the Navy itself, there was only probably about 9 of us.
Can count them on your own hands,
And now, we've just lost count now, which is great.
Which is good, and some take on the reserve role, but some take on the regular role and make it a career pathways for themselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I suppose back in the days when I joined up, the Vietnam War was on, I think, that wasn't sort of an incentive back then for anyone to to join the Defence Force, to go away fighting or whatever, or go away to represent,
Well, exactly. And back in your day, at the ripe old age of 16, 19, what have you?
16, yeah.
Yeah, when joined the Navy. Back then, we as black people, we were second citizens, so there would have been racism very strongly back then, and look, it's still here today, but it raises its ugly head every now and again. But I'm feeling that the Australian Defence Force is arms open, protecting our First Nation people to come to the table, to become soldiers, so to speak, but well looked after and equal opportunity for anybody involved.
Yes, all of the above, because when I joined the Navy, I was still under the Aboriginal Protection Act.
You would have been, yes.
And and that was a challenge in itself, going away and coming back home. The thing was, the key was the education that we weren't getting at that time up at Torres Straits, because we were also the first high school students too at that time. There was no high school.
Behind the eight ball in all facets of life.
Yes, that's right. We were the first high school students, and then we had that opportunity when it came up. And of course, because of, the war was happening at the time in Vietnam. I suppose, you could.
So tell us your story. Did you come across any racism towards you as a black man? Or you had a friendly platoon, so to speak, that you worked with?
No, I've always reminded about the colour of the uniform. Course. It's the one colour.
Yeah, nicely said. Okay. Yes. So you would have been singing that war cry over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Well and truly, I had to bite my lip sometimes and hold back in my temper and all of that. But
made you stronger.
Yeah, but and also, we had a boxing tournament too in the ring. So
there you go. Use that as the vehicle for revenge,
but,
so to speak.
No, but it wasn't there really and truly.
Sure.
It was just for sports.
I hear you. And so here we are. And Anzac Day, lest we forget. But that's, we are a country, thanks to our soldiers who fought. But we do have a war that happened in this country, and I'm talking about the Frontier War. What's your take on that, Uncle Phil?
When you say the Frontier War, what do you really...
When the colonization, when the white sailors first come to this country, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Guns versus spears, that doesn't count as a war. That was a war on this country, was it?
Yeah. No, that was war and a challenge in itself. And even when I had the uniform on it and go back home holiday, my uniform meant nothing, basically.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Even here on the mainland in Australia, and a very good mate of mine who lives here, one of my mates, Les Boyd, him and I, we know all about it because, all our mates would go into the pubs and have a beer and we were in uniform and we weren't allowed to.
Weren't allowed.
Or even the RSL, we weren't even allowed.
And that's all changing now thanks to, equality and respecting all Australians and, of course, respecting all soldiers. Who signed up in the Navy, Army, and Air Force, what have you? You know, but we acknowledge in the ANZAC who lost their lives for us to live our life, and so very important. And unless we forget, in more ways than one, Uncle.
Yep. Well, now that we've got the. What we call the NIDP program now, and
NIDP program,
and the
acronym for that,
the Navy Indigenous, Navy Indigenous Development Program.
Okay,
yes,
NIDP. Yep,
yep,
and that's where young ones can sign up to become a Navy personnel.
Yes, and most of our recruits do come from communities now today.
Okay. Do they have to finish grade 12 to do that?
You have to be 17 for a start.
17 for a start, yeah.
And and that's where the opportunity is now. I've been to a couple of graduations.
Yes.
And I was what made me really want to come on this program because of the incentive that gave one young girl. Can I tell the story?
Please go ahead.
Yeah, she was from Cowan. And when they had to do a spiel on themselves when they graduate, and what she wanted to be was a aircraft electronic engineer.
Wow! Where'd she come from? Which community did she come from?
From Cowan.
From Cowan. that's looking up. That's vision
that's
her future.
Shooting for the stars.
Shooting for the stars.
There.
Exactly.
And
did she tell you the story, did she?
No, she had to stand up in front of them as she graduated and a passing out parade.
Yeah.
She had to state what she was aiming for.
And so you were there at that graduation, were you?
Yes.
You would have made a beeline for her straight away.
About 6 years ago, 7 years ago it happened.
And where's she today?
I nearly fell off my chair, I tell you. Yeah.
Is she in the
No, I didn't keep in contact with her, but I know very well now that a lot of our mob have moved on.
Sure.
They're in prominent places. If not, they're in charge of...
After enlisting.
Yes.
At a career pathway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So doors can open up. That's fantastic.
No, I always maintain this fact that we should have a career pathway, and because my incentive to when I joined the Navy was I used to look at a magazine from America, which was the Ebony magazine.
Yes, that's right.
And
all the successful black people, all industries.
I don't know if that magazine's still around, but that was one of my incentives too.
And a beautiful magazine at that, and we should have a similar magazine in this country.
I was going to come to that.
Empowering our black people in this country.
That's right.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. So it is a beautiful pathway in regarding a career pathway with the Australian Defence Force, Navy with the hat that you're wearing. Opportunities are there available. So if young ones wanted to look at the NIDP, Navy Indigenous Development Program, how do they get in touch with you guys?
Well, we've got a website, and also we do some promotion ourselves. We're actually looking at visiting communities and schools.
Good.
So it would be first-hand promotion.
Mm.
And so Cairns, the NIDP program now that's situated here. Like I said, it was run before by Don.
They're
and
very proactive, Jared. Very proactive, because I had yarns on radio before about this program. You mentioned brother there, Jerry Savage.
Yes.
He's been a part of these conversations. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And but now it's getting more intense, and there's a demand there now. You know, so we need to fill in those demands and do a bit more extensive recruiting, I'd say.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, thank you very much for the yarn. I think it's a great opportunity. The fact that we're talking about it here now on National Talk Black, our mob out there are listening to our daily yarns. We may be inspiring some black person out there to join the Navy.
Most definitely. Like I said, it'll help, you financially and also, give you a direction in life. And if you, want to raise a family, there's, nothing stopping you from moving forward in terms of financial support,
And when we're talking about the job, we're talking about a full paid job. We're talking about holiday pay, sick pay, and also long service and pension and what have you, and also superannuation in regard to the afterlife of work.
Yes, most definitely. I recommend any young people who are listening out there today
to look at this opportunity.
If you're struggling. And, in school or when you don't have any, plans for when you're leaving school, contact us and just look us up on the website.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm thinking Navy personnel, just before you go, it's a transit career as well, because you get to travel. That's a big ocean. There's two-thirds of the earth is water.
Yes.
So, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's more water than land. So the travelling around out there, it could open up doors in regard to travel experiences as well.
Oh, most definitely. I did a few travelling in my time as a 16, 17-year-old, I should say, overseas. And, I'm sure my parents back home were a bit worried and would have thought, oh, what did I do here? Sign this paper, don't see my son anymore.
But traveling the world.
Yeah, but those days, like I said, we didn't have phones. So that's the other thing we have to overcome too, is that,
communication.
The distraction.
Distraction. True.
Yeah.
Look, a very important yarn, a deadly yarn. Thank you very much, Uncle Phil Bowie, Petty Officer, Elder for the Navy, and he also he wears the NIDP. That's the Navy Indigenous Development Program, and he's pushing for more black people to join the Navy, especially you young ones there. Their career pathway. Have a look at it, and here we are, Anzac Day. Lest we forget.
Yeah.
All the best to you, Uncle. You take care, right?
Yeah, thanks. God bless.
God bless. A beautiful yarn there with Uncle Phil Bowie. And look, so powerful. He was a Navy personnel, then retired, but then they approached him, knocked on his door to come back on board as an uncle, as a leader in that field. So he's happy to be in that position and open up the opportunity for young black people, First Nation people, to join the Navy and look at it as a job or career pathway. Fantastic. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong? We are Yarn Up here on National Talk Black on Anzac Day, lest we forget. Too deadly.
There's a shearer on the board, and he's looking overawed. The wool on them big weathers, tough as rope. There's burr and fly and wrinkle, and his eye has lost its twinkle. Words around the roustabouts, he hasn't got a home. There's a war across the sea, and that man Gallipoli. This wool's for making blankets for our men. The shearer's boy has left our sunshine to join the Anzac front line. The shearer won't be quitting till he clears his pen. And he'll be striking a blow for Australia. And friends, he won't hear of failure. He's striking a blow. Go, Aussie, go. He's striking a blow for this great southern land. There's a digger in the trenches with blood and dead and stenches. He waits for his orders to attack. Then they all charge Johnny Turk, these boys from back of Burke. He whispers, tell Bashira, Dad, I won't be coming back. And he'll be striking a blow for Australia. And friends, he won't hear of failure. He's striking a blow. Go, Aussie, go. He's striking a blow for this great southern land. There's some kids in green and gold, with pride they learn from old. They give way to no one but the Lord. They won't hesitate to stand beside their mate. I reckon they're descended from that shearer on the board. And they'll be striking a blow for Australia. And friends, they won't hear of failure. They're striking a blow. Go, Aussie, go. They're striking a blow for this great southern land. And we'll keep striking a blow for Australia. And friends, we won't hear of failure. We're striking a blow. Go, Aussie, go. We're striking a blow for this great southern land. Yes, we're striking a blow for this great southern land.
G'day, you mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Tell me, was it hell in the First World War? Countless journeys back and forth, from the trenches to the shore. A hand litter and a bandage pack, blood and grinding pain. A journey into no man's land, courage under strain. Owen Stanley Rangers, the Fuzzy Wuzzy Angels. The Japanese had no regard for a Red Cross patch. You lived with death and dined with disease. Second 12th Field Ambulance Angel appears, drags another digger back into the fold. No one should die alone. Stretcher bearer, tell me, is it duty or a calling to be the carer of your comrade who has fallen? To those who've gone before me, in honor of your story, stretcher bearer, carry me home or carry me on to glory. Mates, they call him Doc. He's at home on a Harley. It's It's been a good while since Vietnam. His last dust off with Charlie. If you see him in the street, his colours, tats and beard, don't judge him, don't be afraid. There's nothing to be feared. Stretcher bearer, tell me, is it duty or a calling to be the carer of your comrade who has fallen? To those who've gone before me, in honour of your story, stretcher bearer, carry me home or carry me on to glory. Combat paramedic, Afghanistan. He bears the guilt but he's not to blame. He tried so hard to save them. He can't hold down a job now that he's at home. There's people all around him, but he feels so alone. Stretcher bearer, tell me, is it duty or a calling to be the carer of your comrade who has fallen? To those who've gone before me, in honour of your story, stretcher bearer, carry me home or carry me on to glory. To those who've gone before me, in honour of your story, on the shoulders of giants I stand in the sun. Stretcher bearer, carry me home or carry me on to glory.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie, coming to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on the Yidinji country. That's BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now we're coming up to Anzac Day, lest we forget. Recognising the contribution Indigenous people have made to the ADF, the Australian Defence Force. The Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have served in every conflict and commitment involving Australian defence contingents since Federation, including both World Wars and the intervals of peace since the Second World War. Now, with that, I'm going to talk to a deadly sister, Army Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Hall. Look, it's a blazing trail for Indigenous women in the military. A woman who has become one of the highest-ranking Indigenous soldiers in the country. Says she hopes to inspire not only other First Nation people, but all women to consider a military career. And with that, a very good morning, Army Lieutenant Colonel Eileen. How are you?
Hey, Yundi Yalada, and Yundi Yalada to all your listeners out there. So, yeah, no, very, very humbled, and I'm super excited to be talking today with you, yarning with you today.
Tidali. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel. Thank you so very much. Sister, before we start, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
So on my mother's side, from East Cape York, so from Hopewell and Woodja Woodja, I have family ties, but also extended ties to Angamuthi people and Waka Waka and Wakamen as well. So Bakaramuku as well as Stucky River area. So it's a little bit all over.
All over. Fruit salad?
But my father was an Irish immigrant. So.
Irish immigrant. Okay, there you go. There's a fruit salad right there, my sister. All mixed, which is too deadly. Thank you. Listen, congratulations. You've become one of the highest-ranking Indigenous soldiers in the country. My sister, proper deadly. How deadly are you?
I think we all come from deadly backgrounds.
True.
And inspirational stories, and a lot of it comes from those that came before us. So I'm really blessed that I had people that, you know, my elders and other people I've met on my life journey that have been inspirational for me. And, you know, I think it's important to have that positive outlook. And, you know, my first job ever was a two-day CDEP, Aboriginal health worker.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, humble beginnings. And, you know, don't let that stop you from exactly. where you want to end up. Yeah.
Yeah, well, where you start out in the marketplace don't mean you have to stay there forever. It's all, really? We live a life of chapters, don't we? And from the CDP, there you were, yeah, you then moved on, and now you're in a career. How long have you been with the Army?
When I was CEO for Woodja, Woodja Aboriginal Shire Council, 2016 to 2019, in 2017 we decided to just try getting reservists, like community, mainly our young ones into Army through the reserve program through 51st Battalion.
Yes.
And that's when I joined as a reservist. And then at the end of my council contract, ending of 2019, I became like a full-time, like super reservist. And then in 2020, I did 12 months down in Jarvis Bay Territory during COVID as Director of Operations down there. And then this position came up in August 2021.
Mm.
And so we had the celebration in Woodja Woodja because that's where my defence career started. But I might just explain to the listeners that how I fit in. So I'm ringing from Larrakia country in Darwin.
Okay.
So firstly, I just want to pay respects to Larrakia Nation on
whose,
you know, land I currently call in from, because they've been very, very supportive, you know, of the work that we've been doing. So yeah, the Regional Force Surveillance Group headquarters, we have three Regional Force Surveillance Group units underneath us. So in the east there, we have 51st Battalion. That covers, you know, Cairns, Tableland, Gulf of Carpentaria, Cape York, right up to the Torres Strait, PNG border. Then we have North Force, that covers all of the Northern Territory and Kimberley Squadron. And then further west in WA, we have the Pilbara Regiment. So it's about 52% of Australia's landmass that we cover. Around 20% of uniformed soldiers in Army actually come from within the Regional Force Surveillance Group area of operations. In some years, we've managed to get it up to 40%. So that's a huge contribution just from our mob within the area of operations.
So when you say 40%, you're saying 40% of First Nation people in
who
enlisted?
Serve, in uniform.
Beautiful.
Within Army come from within that area. Yeah, and some, I think 2018 we managed to get it up to 40% because we had a, you know, 2018, 2019 we had a really big recruiting drive.
And how many of our sisters there, Army Lieutenant Colonel?
How many? Oh, at my level?
Yeah, well, sisters. And good to see our mob enlist, but females as well.
Oh, that's a good question. So within we're in the process of, like, for example, over in the east there, we're trying to get it to 50%. One of the biggest barriers we've identified and we're working through with JUA and NIAA is around when we're trying to recruit First Nation women is around the issues around childcare when they come to do their training.
Yes.
And so we're currently looking at options and ways to support them so that they can do that.
Oh, you're saying so mothers who want to join the force?
Yes.
Support them because they have babies.
You know, yeah, exactly. And sometimes even fathers as well that might have childcare responsibilities. So we're trying to work with them around solutions, you know, so that they can still continue that and do that without it affecting them, you know, wanting to join. So, you know, the response has been amazing. But it's a journey, and each person's journey, you know, we've got to create pathways and also deal with some of the barriers that they may be facing, and childcare is one of them. Mm. Another one is around also understanding with JUA and NIAA around actually getting reserve work recognised as a recognised work activity. So that was sorted out early last year because it was originally there but it dropped off. So, you know, trying to do that. And then also working, for example, like with some of our industry partners around when mob do their training with Army and then go back to community, those skills are transferable.
Exactly, beautiful.
And so, so there's a lot of work now across the top end, especially with our peak organisations like WALGA in Western Australia, Western Australia Local Government, Legant Local Government Association, NT, and TICA, Torres and Cape Indigenous Councils Alliance, around recognising the training that First Nation men and women soldiers do as reservists, and even when they, you know, post-release from the men, when they go back to community and country, those skills are transferable, and so that increases their employability.
Exactly.
So it's it's recognising those. And so when we look at the Anzac Day spirit, and in particular the contribution our First Nation mob have done, it's also the communities themselves. So we know with ABS census that was done in 2021, nationally one in five families has a connection with defence, either directly or historically. But when we look at our First Nation communities across the top end, it's a lot closer. It's one in two families has a direct or indirect connection with defence. And so that's a closer connection.
Yeah, yes.
And so it's much more tangible. But it also provides us an opportunity where we can say those skills can transfer to the community. And whether it's in times of disaster management, you know, whether it's opportunities to work out logistics for NDIS or other things, it opens a lot more opportunities and pathways for our mob. And that's why we trialled it in 2017, not realising that we actually had a 100-year previously connection with the Army, with the two old fellows from Wudju Wudju, which is, you know, Aji Norman and his brother Aji Charlie Baird, who had gone to
war. That's part of one of your inspiration as to why you joined the Army as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we'd forgotten that. And so the work we've been also doing with War Memorial with Uncle Michael Bell, who's an Nullawa man from there, is reconnecting those, you know, defence song lines, you know, with those communities, because some communities have forgotten or didn't realise the actual service or role of service that their community members had during those times since Federation. There's even some work being done around the Boer War as well, so that's interesting, and that'll probably come out later this year, I understand, with Uncle Michael Bell and them guys.
To our deadly listeners out there, I recognise the contribution Indigenous people have made to the ADF, Australian Defence Force. Trinity Trevor Murray from Recurry having a deadly yarn with beautiful sister, deadly sister, Army Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Hall. She's become one of the highest ranking Indigenous soldiers in the country. It's an honour to be speaking with you, sister. Just talking about the Army, the regimental platform and the rules and regulations, do you find the Australian Defence Force a respecting culture for First Nation people being enlisted?
We have our own Army Indigenous Consultative Advisory Board. I sit on there, and Aunty Lorraine Hatton is our Indigenous Elder for Army at the moment. And so one of the things that we talk about is how do we connect defence then with our First Nations soldiers, men and women, and also the communities in which they serve or have bases or depots. It's really important that connection is there and providing that cultural bridge to do so. One of the things that we've been also looking at is around what does cultural safety look like within the workspace? And so, example, 2 weeks ago, Joint Health Command, that does all the health service provision across our defence forces, both, Army, Navy and Air Force, they actually released their joint health, Indigenous health commitment statement, and top of their commitment was around cultural safety. So making sure that we have culturally safe spaces for our Indigenous men and women to access healthcare, but also understanding that healthcare also has to be reflective of First Nation of people, particularly around social and emotional well-being.
Yes.
What does that actually look like? Also looking at the provision of that, particularly sometimes our mainstream providers may not understand or how that can be conducted. And so linking in with our local Indigenous providers. So we've already had an arrangement in place for a number of years, say, for example, like with Witch Hopperin, getting our First Nation soldiers, you know, to access the 715 health screens there, looking at that potentially across not only just for our First Nation men and women, but also using that case management framework as well, almost potentially across, like, mainstream. So there's an opportunity there that the learnings that we do with our First Nation men and women does have application across other areas as well of defence. And so cultural safety is a big one that we've been working very hard on, and also looking at the policies and practices at the moment, how does that then play out? And I guess the other interesting thing is, wider defence is now starting to understand the shared history First Nation communities have with other countries. So, for example, like the 400 years of trading that across the top end that we had with the Macassar trade. Also for pearl divers, yep. You know, like a lot of them came from, you know, Japanese, Sri Lankan. Mm. You had the gold rush era, you know, with Chinese. You know, you've got some of our mob that intermarried with mob from India. We have Afghani traders, you know, Kamaliers, mm. you know, from Central Desert. There's an Afghanistan Muslim connection. You know, you've also got Russian connections. So there's all those opportunities to develop cultural intelligence,
yes.
because First Nation people not only have cultural responsibility for their own history and culture and culture law, L-O-R-E, but they've also got that opportunity to provide cultural intelligence and shared understanding for our, mm. you know, defence in terms of how do you interact with other nations, you know.
So exactly.
We are many nations in one nation.
Yeah, so beautiful. Nicely explained. Nicely explained. Mm. So we're talking about a solid foundation there for our First Nation
yeah.
people to look at a military career as such, and you're promoting for women as well as all First Nation people to look at the ADF as a military career.
Yeah, well, we're starting to see with the alternative pathway. So we have Army Indigenous Development Program. Navy has their own Navy Indigenous
yes.
Development Program, and so we've got two main places we deliver that out of. We have one in Kapuka down in New South Wales, but we've also got a fourth arm to the Regional Force Development Group, which is our Indigenous Development Wing out at Berrimah in Darwin.
Mm.
And so we have our own in-house training that we do for our First Nation soldiers across the three Regional Force Surveillance units. So at the moment, for example, we've got a mob from 51 that have come across, and North Force as well as from and particularly from the Kimberley area
mm.
that are doing training, they're what they call Red Sea training in
yes.
Darwin, but we also have those First Nation men and women that are from all over Australia that are doing the Army Indigenous Development Program, Pathways Program. It's a 17-week program, and then during that time they get to experience Army, but they also get exposure to the other two services as well.
Yeah.
And then if they decide that they want to go on to general entry, then they can go down to Kapuka. So the ending of last year, we had two people, Private Kieran Ambram
mm-hmm.
From Yarrabah. Him and another lady had graduated from AIDP, gone down to Kapuka, passed, and now they're currently going through their trade training.
Deadly.
So some will start off, come off CDP, do 18 months, for example, as a reservist RFSL soldier within the Regional Force Surveillance Units. And now we're starting to see that pathways where they do AIDP and then go on to do general entry. And so each journey is a little bit different. And it's also understanding, you know, how we work with trauma, because a lot of our young ones that are coming through have had trauma. And so one of the ways we look at that is understanding that where they come from, and as we know, like literature tells us, statistics tell us, where we live determines how long we live, you know. And so with that in mind, we need to do waivers around health, around education.
Exactly.
You know, some of our mob have high interactions with the justice system, so we need to do criminality waivers and also psychological because of the trauma.
Well,
so
exactly.
That's where those case management plans come in place to help them. And so we do those waivers and then work with them on their journey through the defence journey that they have. And
exactly. So well, we've all got a past. It doesn't mean a past does not equal a future. And in future, anybody at any moment can start a new life. You know, it's a clean slate, isn't it, tomorrow and the future?
Yes.
Yeah, deadly.
And so each contribution is going to be different and each journey is different and there's no time frame on it, you know. It's important. We do have another element, which is our local observer element. And so for those ones that, you know, a little bit older or they have a different skill set, they may not want to be a patrolman, they may not, or patrolwoman, or may not want to be a combat support operator, there's the third element, which is the local observer element. And so that's where you'll start seeing a lot of, like, those ones that are our connectors and influencers. Mm. We might have to get you signed up, Mukai.
Hey,
you know?
Look out, shut up, too. Too deadly. Incoming!
Yeah,
I'm allergic to bullets, my sister.
Hey, same. But you know, that raises a good point. The first thing mob will ask when you want to, you know, when you're talking about recruitment is like, I don't want to go Ukraine.
Yeah, true, go war.
Yeah. But, you know, when you join with us, particularly for our area, you know, long-range reconnaissance and surveillance, we only want you for domestic operations within your own country.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful.
And so you don't go overseas, unless you want to deploy, but our thing is just on country. We just want to recruit the mob on country.
And full-time work is, full-time payment, and that's holiday pay, sick pay, superannuation and all that. So the career path it's a great platform to look in after you as a soldier who's here to protect this country, and the country protects you in that sense, doesn't it?
Definitely, and that's what we always say. If you look after country, country looks after you.
Yeah,
and,
true. We belongs to that, eh? We belongs to that.
That's story for us, and it's really important to understand that. And, you know, a lot of our men and women, particularly with Operation Resolute in the Torres Strait, with the PNG border up there, do border protection up there. They've also done it in the Kimberley and also in the Northern Territory. Where now you'll see a lot of our First Nation soldiers, we're going through the process of getting Indigenous languages recognised. We're talking through that process at the moment, given UNESCO has made the 10-year requirement around acknowledging Indigenous languages. So the time is right now for those conversations to happen. And also to acknowledge, you know, things that happened in the past around the recognition. Exactly. You know, start moving that forward and acknowledge that sometimes the policies and practices of the past will not define us moving forward. We'll learn from those. And then put in place, particularly around the cultural safety aspect, and the recognition aspect. It's so important.
Look, a beautiful yarn. Army Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Hall, I thank you very much, my sister. You too, Dudley. You've been given a beautiful information there for people to be inspired and join the force. There is a beautiful military career available and can set your life up. And it's a fantastic opportunity. But I thank you for sharing, sister. And look, please do keep in touch. All the best to all our mob there who are serving. We are coming up to Anzac, lest we forget. I'd like to make mention of Frontier War as well, lest we forget, my sister.
Yes, exactly. And can I please say to the listeners out there, may each and every one of you be blessed today. And no matter what your journey, I hope to get to meet you. And, please stay strong, hey?
Yeah, too deadly.
And I forgot to mention family up north there. We're NPA and also in the Torres Strait. And also recognising their 80th anniversary this year with the Torres Strait Light Infantry Brigade. That's a huge celebration that's happened and recognition this year. So
thank you.
A lot of opportunity this year for recognition.
Yeah, and hats off to ADF who are recognising and acknowledging that as well.
My
sister.
Like I said, time's right now.
All right, my sister, you take care. All the best, and we'll be in touch, sister.
Okay, and love to family out there. I know you're going to ring me and growl me afterwards for not saying hello. Big hello to everybody.
True, darling. All the best to you. Take care. All the best.
You too, Mokai, and love to family.
God bless. Bye-bye. To Dudley Mob, there's a beautiful conversation there with Army Lieutenant Colonel Eileen Hall. Fantastic. He's become one of the highest ranking Indigenous soldiers in the country. So to Dudley and fantastic. A beautiful yarn there. And thank you very much for the yarn there, Sister Mob. Look, a great opportunity for a military career. So do investigate. Check with ADF, Australian Defence Force, about even casual part-time, reserve, and then if not full-time, but any facet in regarding the ADF. Great opportunity. Have you saying Yana Strong into the conversation here, National Talk Black, Trendy Trevor on the mic here, taking you right through to 12 noon Queensland time, and Dudley number here, 1-800-422-416. Yes, very good morning, you Dudley Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, coming alive from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call and send it, deadly number 1-800-422-416. Now, new research indicates First Nation people created complex, highly effective fighting tactics during Australia's frontier wars. Boolarong Press, new release, How They Fought by Dr. Ray Kervhove, is the first work in Australia to offer a detailed outline on the nature of Indigenous military organisation, training, strategy, weaponry and defence during the frontier wars. how they fought, this deadly book brings to the light provocative details about the scale and the ingenuity of First Nation responses to the tide of white settlement. So with that, and talk to the author here, Associate Professor Dr. Ray Kirkhove, author of How They Fought. And a very good morning to you, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Doctor?
Down in Brisbane.
Down in Brisbane, all right, fantastic. Up here in Cairns, far north Queensland, hillbilly up north. But let's talk about this deadly book of yours, How They Fought. Now, Australia's got a history, good or bad, black or white. The history is the history. The government, non-Indigenous people, don't feel though that there wasn't a war on the Big Island in Australia. But the frontier war is what we're talking about here and what the book is about. We as First Nation people, we think, you know, like when there's spears versus guns, that's not classed as a war. And also, you know, we think lest we forget. Please add to the conversation, Doctor.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that I was looking at. And I must say this started out with a lot of the talk I heard from other First Nations people. I work a lot with different mob, and they were telling me about the warrior traditions that they had,
yes,
and also about their victories and that. And so I started to look at all this, the earliest accounts, and I found that there were a lot of successes that like people think, oh, spears and clubs and that, they're not so great. They were actually pretty damn good. You know, the average time they'd go out on a fight, you'd have like a cluster, each warrior had a cluster of, say, 12, 14 spears, and they'd have a whole lot back behind them too, like a whole pile as well, and they'd shoot these things. They went great distances, and they went silently. And they were actually quicker than a musket, because a musket, you've got to reload each time.
Sure.
So it was often quite an equal battle, the same like the clubs and the different, some of these clubs and boomerangs, they could actually go behind trees and things. They were quite effective. And, so I got very interested in that and showing that it was actually a lot more effective than people realise.
So strong warriors, very deadly warriors, but the fact that remains, there was a war on the Big Island.
And a heck of a lot of people died, you know. Mm. In fact, much more. People like, we think about Vietnam, and if you put all the Australians that died in Vietnam, in Korea and Afghanistan together, that's still not even a fraction of the white people that died. Now, this is the interesting thing, because, you know, there was, if you took all the First Nations people that died, then it was a much bigger conflict than we had for World War One and World War Two. But even the white people that died was a really large number, and that just shows how efficient they were. And they often held back the tide of settlement for some of the decades. I mean, where you are, the whole rainforest area there?
Yes, yes.
They had to renegotiate their terms because that was so effectively defended. Mm. They couldn't really. They had to kind of negotiate with all the groups there because they couldn't really make any advances there.
Any people living on the land, peaceful as they are, living on the land, and when another group of people come to the land, but they come in with weapons. The First Nation people are fighting for their life, are fighting for their rights, fighting for their land.
Of course, and this is what, you know, and people say, oh, why were they doing that? Well, every nation on earth, you know, the men would fight to protect their people. And in fact, that's when I looked at it. A lot of the training and initiation, it gets forgotten now, but, you know, when you got initiated, you also got trained up in how to use weapons, and you were told right at the end when you sort of graduated, you were told that was your duty to defend the women and the children and the old people, and I think that explains a lot because that's a lot of what happened.
Now, Dr. Ray, the government and non-Indigenous Australians, do they not accept that there was a war? Frontier war on the
Well, there was, yeah, there was a big, yeah, but it's changing. Like,
okay.
Just the evidence is too huge now.
Exactly.
And you'll find a lot of the schools have got it in the curriculum. Even the war memorial, there's a lot of the people that are on the council for the war memorial looking at putting that in. So I think in a few years it'll be pretty set, you know.
Mm.
But it's a funny thing, like, we're behind, like, if you look at the States, the United States, they've had the Indian Wars. People knew about that.
Yes.
They even had movies about it back in the 50s. But, yes. And they had wrote about it even 100 years ago. And here in Australia, they just, a lot of white people, we haven't done it, you know.
Blindside.
And that's why.
Hey? They're blind to it. I mean, they're not acknowledging
they want to pretend it's different or something. I think it's probably one of the greatest stories.
Yeah.
Now, that might sound strange because of all the bloodshed, but I just think in terms of seeing how brave people were and how ingenious they were.
Yes.
The drama, I think that's why people are often attracted, even though it's sad stuff,
but people are
often attracted to sort of these dramatic times, because it's sort of like, well, what do you do when the chips are down?
Yes.
Well,
I was just going to say, Doctor, across this country, First Nation people celebration or acknowledgement of the frontier wars. I know here in Cairns we have every year the frontier war, and there lies the statement, lest we forget.
That's a big one. And when you start looking at how some of these things went on for decades and how clever it was, and that was often big alliances, that's what I was looking at, the fact that it wasn't just one little group by itself. They often got together with a whole lot of neighbouring groups and then fought, the whites. So it was pretty incredible stuff.
Yes. So your book, How They Fought, is out now, and Indigenous Tactics and Weaponry of Australia's Frontier Wars. Where can people pick up the book, Doctor?
It's available in a lot of bookshops, but, in case you can't find it in your bookshop, you can get it directly from Boolerong Press.
Boolerongpress.com.au.
I'm also running an online course that's based on the book a bit for the Australian Institute of Genocide Studies. You can find that online.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you very much. A very important tool. We're talking about having the truth be told, and truth will set you free is what we say. But Australia has a history, good or bad, black or white, but the history is history, and we should have all cards on the table, Doctor.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. All the best. You take care, Doctor.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Dedly Yan there, that's Dr. Ray Kirkhove. He's the author of How They Fought, and that book is out now. And Indigenous Tactics and Weaponry of Australian Frontier Wars. So, yes, it then confirms that, of course, there was a war here on the Big Island, Frontier Wars. And I know up here in Far North Queensland, we do acknowledge and have marches and celebrations and, acknowledgement of the Frontier Wars, lest we forget. Have you seen Yanup Strong? Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, deadly number here, 1-800-422-416.